The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
What we're watching is the beginning of a war between the United States and Russia. Let's be as honest and clear-eyed as we can be, especially now, because it matters. The Biden administration just inserted itself with force into the middle of a hot war between two foreign powers. That means the United States is now an active participant in a war. We are at war with Russia. Whether or not that war has been officially declared, whether or not Congress has authorized that war, all of that is irrelevant. That war is happening right now as we watch. Why is no one in Washington saying anything about this?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Tucker Carlson. I don't know whether you agree with that or disagree with that. I know the U.S. is adamantly trying to stay out of direct conflict with Russia, no boots on the ground. But clearly, you know, we've seen secretaries of state, we've seen, you know, millions of dollars in a lot of technology making its way over to Ukraine. I think everybody underestimated Ukraine, and I was one of those. I thought, you're dealing with Russia. You know, they've already encircled the country. They've got, you know, precision weaponry. They've got satellites. They're going to roll into this country. They're going to decapitate the government. And, you know, 4 days later, you're going to see some puppet regime set up. But that wasn't the case, right? We're entering the third month of a war. It's pretty unbelievable what these Ukrainian people have done. And if you've been following any of this, it looks like there are mass graves. There are war crimes. There's a lot that's happening there. Again, before I go any further, I'll just stop on this one point. As we take a look at a possible new Cold War with Russia, as we take a look at what's unfolding, I just am so convinced, I don't have a doubt in my mind, that the consecration that Pope Francis did on March 25th of this year has unleashed torrents of grace that now have put into motion events that will bring about a radical change. Today, believe it or not, is actually the anniversary of a series of apparitions that took place in Ukraine. A place called Hrushchev is where the Virgin appeared on April 27th, 1987. And she gave a warning, you know, there, and also words of consolation. If I have time a little bit later, I'll share with you what she had to say. But right in a moment, Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be joining me. So let me just set the scene for you. Let me let you know what's going on. You're welcome to join me, too. Feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. What Russia's done is horrible. They rolled into a nation, right, in an effort to take it over. It's taking a lot longer than Vladimir Putin thought it would. I think he got some real bad advice. And as you heard yesterday, Russia is threatening again to punish any nation that interferes and to target NATO countries that are sending military supplies to Ukraine. Now, what that means, I'm not quite sure how they're going to do that, but they've given that warning. Today, Fox News reported that Putin himself warned, and I want to quote this. He said, quote, if anyone ventures to intervene from outside and pose unacceptable threats of a strategic nature to Russia, they should know that our country's, our counter-retaliatory strike will take place with lightning speed. Now, we do know they have hypersonic weapons, right? Is that a warning to the U.S.? I know it's also a warning to Japan. The U.S. is doing some joint exercises with them, the eastern side. So, I mean, a lot of nations can be caught up in that net. He appears not to be making idle threats either. He went on to say this. He says, we have all the tools to do this, the kind that no one else can boast of right now. He knows that, look, I'm sure we're working on those technologies. Apparently, I think he's referring to those hypersonic missiles that his country has. But if he knows you're vulnerable, would he use those weapons against the United States? He says, quote, we will not boast. We will not use them. He says, quote, we will not boast. We will use them if necessary. I want everyone to know that. All the decisions have been made in this regard. Now, that's tough talk, right? That's tough talk. Some say, oh, he's just saying that because he's losing in Ukraine. And, you know, he doesn't want any more support of Ukraine. With all the destruction and havoc Russia is wreaking in Ukraine right now, I think Western nations should take this talk seriously. I do. He had no problem rolling in and destroying lives, buildings, a whole other nation. So are our officials taking it seriously enough? What's interesting, if you watch those on the left, on the political left in our country, they've actually become Putin haters, right? I say have become because you might remember when Donald Trump, when President Barack Obama, remember Obama told then Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev that he, Obama, would have more flexibility after the 2012 elections to, you know, make changes to the U.S.-Russian relationship. You might also recall then the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, that she went over there with that infamous reset button. It was ridiculous, right? Remember, she presented it to her Russian counterpart. That all changed in 2016 when Russia suddenly became the place that, you know, was trying to get Donald Trump into the White House by stealing the election. You know, we've had all this talk of Russian collusion, right? So let's talk about what's unfolding right now. Our relationship to Russia, are we going to see a Cold War? Are there possibilities that Russia would use a hypersonic weapon against a NATO ally? I'm joined today by Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, author of his latest book, The Devil and Karl Marx. You might want to check that out, and a great contributor here. Dr. Kengor, always a delight. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Hey, Drew. Good to be with you again.
So much going on. Let's start with these threats. Take on that? I know you've studied Putin. I know you've studied the Cold War. Putin's making these threats. Nobody wants to go back to the Bay of Pigs or the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, when there's that reality, should we take his threats today seriously?
Yeah. And in fact, in addition to what you just said there, right, Putin saying if anyone ventures to intervene from the outside, we will strike with lightning speed. Right. Mm-hmm. We have all the tools to do this that no one can boast of. We will not boast. We will use them if necessary. All the decisions have been made in this regard. And that follows, Drew, this statement from Nikolai Petrushev, who is Secretary of Putin's Russian Security Council. He said this yesterday. Quote, the fact is that Ukraine, saturated with weapons, poses a threat to Russia, including from the point of view of the development and use of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. Now, that, of course, is complete nonsense. Ukraine does not have WMDs. They gave up their nuclear weapons in the mid-1990s at the urging of the Clinton administration, people in the West. You know, a lot of people in the West, by the way, said, no, you know, Ukraine, you should keep those nukes, you know, use those as a deterrent to keep the Russian bear at bay, right? But under really intense pressure from Bill Clinton, the United States, by 1996, the Ukrainian officials had ceded all their nukes to Moscow. And then there's this one, too, over the weekend. Sergey Lavrov, who's Putin's just terrible foreign minister, he says he's talking here about the threat from Ukraine to Russia, right? Quote, the danger is serious. It is real. It should not be underestimated, unquote. So here you have Putin, two of his top officials, talking about what a nuclear danger Ukraine poses to Russia. So people scratching their heads to make sense out of this. How can this be? Easy. We're being set up here. They are contriving a pretext, I think, to be able to use Russian WMDs against Ukraine. I think that's what, you know, just like they said several weeks ago, and we talked about it at the time, that Russia had to go in and invade Ukraine in order to denazify it, right? Denazify it from what, their Jewish president, Volodymyr Zelensky, and it was a big head scratcher. How could they be saying this? This is called Russian disinformation. Dezinformatsiya is the Russian word. The KGB were masters at it. They had in the Kremlin a department of agitprop, agitation and propaganda. Vladimir Putin learned it for over a decade in the KGB. And this escalation right now in the Russian rhetoric, while the Russians are losing in Ukraine, while they're not accomplishing their objectives, this is very scary. And I think it's presaging something very disastrous to come. It's not good, Drew. It's a bad situation. Very bad.
you know, you're assuming that, you know, Russia will use these weapons solely against against Ukraine, and probably low yield nuclear weapons or some other form of weapon. They wouldn't. Do you think Vladimir Putin would go so far as to strike a NATO member? I mean, that would just unleash, you know, a massive force against him, and he already has somewhat of a weakened military. But he does have those hypersonic missiles, and he does have an ally in China. So how do you think that would play out?
Well, I'd be shocked if he did, but I told people years ago that he would never, like, invade Kiev, right?
Right?
I mean, you know, he might want parts of the Crimea. I would even say, like, parts of the Crimea, right? But he doesn't want all of Ukraine. What, are you crazy? He's never going to do that. Ukraine's the largest territory in all of Europe, you know, outside of Russia itself. You know, yeah, but what, you think the man's going to invade Kiev? Right? Well, but that's exactly what he's done. And he's also set up here with his rhetoric, that clip that what you read in the beginning, if anyone ventures to intervene from the outside, you know, that's a warning to the United States, to all the NATO members, and consistent with what that Tucker Carlson clip said, you know, we are involved in this because we are sending weapons there. I mean, we've sent over $1 billion in weapons over there. Now, we've avoided things like MiGs, like jets, you know, implementing a no-fly zone, which would involve the U.S. and NATO jets actively, offensively, and, you know, in a defensive move of enforcing a no-fly zone, shooting down Russian planes and killing Russians. But we are providing anti-tank weapons, javelins, Stinger missiles, all these other things that are, in fact, leading to the death of Russian troops. And that's what's defeating Putin. So this man, I could see him widening this beyond Ukraine to a bordering NATO country, and that country that shares the largest border with Ukraine is Poland, which is a NATO member. And, you know, as I said, I think I did your show a couple months ago, the piece I wrote for Crisis Magazine, Keep Your Eyes on Poland, you know, something that Faustina warned us about, Saint Faustina, right, the apostle of divine mercy. Last Sunday was that divine mercy Sunday. So could this spread into Poland? Yeah, I think it could. And once it goes to Poland, it goes to NATO. Article 5 of the NATO Charter kicks in. An attack against one is an attack against all. And then the United States comes in. And, you know, again, I'll repeat, this is a very dangerous situation. We haven't seen anything this volatile, this potentially dangerous, on a continental, European-wide scale, if not farther, than since World War II.
My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to. I'll open the phones. Always good to hear from you. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. John's listening in Helena, Montana. Hi, John. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hey, Drew. Hey. I just, your discussion about the consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart seems to have a lot of people believing that this will save the world from disaster. And I understand that. But it seems to me, you know, as a student of history, that despite Mary's appearance in 1917 in Portugal, and the apparition since then, that humanity really hasn't taken her warnings to heart. And in my personal opinion, you know, as a Catholic and someone who has studied history in school, I think humanity is well overdue, especially the West, especially in everything that's happened in the last half century, was well overdue for chastisement. So I think that humanity is just really deserving of a correction here. And I just wanted to get your take on that, and why you feel that her intervention would necessarily forestall chastisement.
Great question, John. Oh, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, unless I'm misunderstanding exactly how you feel about it.
I think you're spot on. I'm just looking at history and what has happened. I mean, the Virgin has come time and time again, warning the world to amend its life and to repent. In La Salette in 1845, she warned of a great chastisement would become to the world if they did not respond. And we saw the great potato famine strike that part of the world. A great blight fell over France. A million people died from the wheat shortage. On the other side of the Atlantic, she came in 1859 in Champion, Wisconsin, warning of a chastisement that would fall. 12 years to the date of that, it happened. In Fatima, she warned about the rise of atheistic communism and the Holy Father having much to suffer, the annihilation of nations. I mean, so many, I can give you example after example. All these things were predicated on the fact that they could be mitigated or even alleviated if we prayed and returned to God. In Fatima, she specifically asked for consecration to her Immaculate Heart, and there were attempts at it, never happened. When the Marian consecration actually did take place on March 25th, 1984, by John Paul II, we saw, and Dr. Kengor can speak to this as well, he's the expert on this era, we saw in 89 the Iron Curtain collapse, and by 91, the dissolution of the USSR. That was 84. It took years, months, if you want to look at it that way, for that to happen. I tend to believe that the consecration that took place was accepted. In fact, Sister Lucia de Santos said that in 1985, there would have been a nuclear war if that consecration did not take place. I think God intervened. I think mercy reigned. I think Our Lady's promise held true. So Pope Francis felt called to do it again, right? He's now, you know, reissued this consecration, naming specifically Russia and Ukraine in the consecration and invoking the whole world. This consecration, unlike John Paul's, and like Lucia said, that was accepted. It wasn't done exactly right, but it was accepted. This one, I think, had even more attendance. I mean, in 84, we didn't have cell phones. Most people couldn't watch on their laptop. We had bishops all over the world participating, churches overflowing. We had national radio networks broadcasting this, television networks covering it. And I think a lot of people did this. So my position is this. Is there chastisement? Absolutely. The Virgin came in Kibeho, Rwanda, talked about a genocide where a million people lost their lives and several million had to exit. It was a bloody genocide, a fulfillment of prophecy. But I do believe that today, especially as my own personal take, all of these things have taken place, but I think there's a power and a protection that comes with consecration to the Mother of God. And I don't know what's going to happen. The war may get bloodier. It often gets darker before the dawn. Things might get worse in Ukraine and Russia. I hope it doesn't escalate beyond that. But in the end, I think Russia is going to come around. I think there's going to be peace. I think the Immaculate Heart's going to triumph. I know how the story is written. But, Doctor, I want your take on this as well. You heard, John, and chastisement has happened time and time again. And I do think the world more than ever, I think we are Gomorrah and Sodom today. I think the world is so sinful. Take a look at what we're doing to our kids. You take a look at what we do to the unborn. You take a look at marriage. You take a look at the rejection of God. You can make a case for why we need to be chastised. But I also believe we're in a Marian era where God's grace is flowing, where God wants to extend his mercy. Final thought, Doc, and I'll let you respond. The Lord told St. Faustina, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior, but woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. I think we're in that window. We're in this window, this period of mercy right now. We can reject it, and if we do, the consequences will be on us. They'll be ours. But I think right now, if enough people respond, and if this consecration, was accepted by heaven, which I think it was, I think graces are going to flow. But, Doctor, I love your thoughts.
Yeah, well, and I would point out to people, you know, the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima is coming up, right, May 13th. So that's only at this point about 3 weeks away, and coming right after Divine Mercy Sunday, last Sunday. And Sister Lucia said, and in fact, she was asked by Cardinal Bertone, who went and talked to her as the official representative of the Vatican under Pope John Paul II. And she died, I think it was February 13, 2005, just a couple months before John Paul II did. But she said that when asked, she said, yes, heaven has accepted the consecration. Now, that said, I think what Pope Francis went and did this, I don't know, I almost called it a reconsecration. I guess to some
extent
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, and mentioning Russia and Ukraine specifically, look, it can hurt, right, Drew?
Right,
and if you're not 100% sure, not to even say that this meant that he wasn't 100% sure about the original consecration in 1984, but you might as well do it again, right? You know, the Blessed Mother is not going to say, "Hey, it already done once, right? I'm refusing this." Or these prayers matter. I was thrilled to see him doing that. And I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, Doc, let's do this. Let me take a short pause. When we come back, we'll grab some calls from around the country. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. When I come back, too, I'll share with you what St. Faustina said about Russia. And, of course, we'll talk much more. We're talking about the rise of a potential conflict with Russia, maybe a Cold War. How does it all shake out? How does it all end? What role does grace play in it? Our conversation continues right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for your show.
This is the Drew Mariani Show.
Marvelous show on the radio right now.
On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It is good to be with you. If you are just getting plugged in, speaking today with one of my favorite guests, Dr. Paul Kengor. He wrote an article called The Left's New Russia Hawks, and you can check that out. We'll try to link over to it. It's at the American Spectator. And it's on Twitter, at Drew Mariani Show. So the link's there if you're in your car driving. Taking a look at a whole lot of things, the spiritual dynamic behind what's happening in the world. How far will Vladimir Putin go? He's threatening some real aggressive action based on the words that he said recently, and he does have technology that can be quite frightening. The war continues between Russia and Ukraine, and Doctor, it's good to have you here with us. Let's jump right back into the phones, and we'll take some calls for you. Dave is in Redwood City, California. Dave, you're on the air with Dr. Kengor. Welcome. All right, Dave, I'm going to give you a chance to get back. I'm going to put you back in queue. Okay, Maureen in Minnesota. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Kengor.
Hi, Drew. Thanks very much for taking my call. Dr. Kengor, I wanted to take a little issue with something that you said. You know, yeah, I don't think that Ukraine has nuclear weapons, but, they found like 136, or it's been documented that there's like 136 biolabs where we're developing really nasty pathogens like the COVID strain over there in the Ukraine. What do you say to that? And Drew, I totally agree with you. The Blessed Mother, the Immaculate Heart, they got this under control.
Amen. All right. Well, Doc, let's talk about those biolabs. There's, depending on the media outlet that you're watching, there was a lot of propaganda out saying, hey, they were making some nasty pathogens. Some people have said, and I'll let you respond, that the U.S. went in there after, they gave up their nukes in 94 and helped to not only decommission them, but use them for other purposes. What do you know about them in response to her comments?
Well, I don't know how much of it is accurate, Drew. The Russian disinformation and lies are so relentless that it's hard to know. It's definitely hard to know, but I know this. Ukraine has not invaded Russia. Ukraine has no desire to invade Russia. The Russians invaded Ukraine, and the Ukraine declared independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. In fact, I think on the 30th anniversary of the collapse of the Soviet Union, which would have been December 2021, you and I probably did a show, and we talked about all these countries that got their independence, all these religious countries with large Catholic populations, places like the Ukraine, Lithuania, others that spent almost a century under the jackboot of atheistic, Soviet, communist totalitarianism. You know, Ukraine was the country that suffered Holodomor, the intentional famine by Stalin, where 5 to 7 million people starved to death. And all the Ukrainian people ever wanted was independence. to become a democracy away from the Kremlin. And now, at the end of the Cold War, here comes a guy from the Kremlin and the KGB who lusts after what he calls, he called the collapse of the Soviet Union, quote, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. This is a country that, that all of our popes and everybody and apparitions and visionaries, you know, have all told us that this was the home of atheistic Soviet communism. It would spread its errors throughout the world. Our Lady of Fatima warned about it. And that's the country that, whose collapse Vladimir Putin called the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. And it has invaded Ukraine. It is raping women. It is committing war crimes. It is killing people by the tens of thousands, people who just a few months ago were just getting up to go to school, go to work, get their groceries, go to their churches, and now are fleeing and fighting for their lives. This is a war of unprovoked aggression by Russia. And by the way, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill, who is also in the KGB, has not condemned Putin on this. So this is all Russia's doing, all Russia's doing, all Russia's doing. Any propaganda right now from the Russians about how they are under threat from the Ukraine's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons is a complete lie. Don't fall for any of it. It's egregious. It's evil.
All right. Mike is listening to us in Chicago. By the way, thank you for that call, Maureen. Mike, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Great show as usual. Dr. Tengor, I have a question for you. Have you ever heard of a guy named Alexander Dugin? He's like a Rasputin.
Oh, yeah, bad news. Yep.
And apparently, I don't know that he and Putin have ever met, but apparently he has the ear of some elites in Russia, and he has this kind of end times philosophy, you know, and this Soviet or this Russian Empire philosophy, plus this, end, you know, peppered in with some end times stuff. So if you've got a dictator that's, you know, a few fries short of a Happy Meal in Putin, and you got this crazy Rasputin character Dugin, you know, whispering in his ear or in the ear of Russian elites, you know, this could be a real problem.
Yeah, that's a great point. I haven't heard anything about Dugin in quite a while, and to call him a Rasputin-like character, that's well put. And Vladimir Putin is definitely a few fries short of a Happy Meal, no question about it. And you add to this, too, you know, a lot of conservative Catholics, right, we like the fact that Putin seemed to be the most religiously faithful Russian leader since Tsar Nicholas II, right, dedicated to the Russian Orthodox Church, dedicated to kind of more traditional sexual traditional ideas, marriage. He said, we want to have mama and papa. He was against same-sex marriage in his country. But he also has this idea of the Russian Orthodox Church rising up as this sort of third Rome. And Stalin even had that view. In fact, I have a chapter on that in my book, A Pope and a President, I think also in The Devil and Karl Marx. And you know, they saw the Russian Orthodox Church as this rival to the Vatican. John Paul II was invited by, I have this in A Pope and a President for sure. I think it was 1990 when Gorbachev and John Paul II met at the first time at the Vatican. And they were thrilled to be meeting each other. And Gorbachev invited John Paul II to Moscow. And John Paul II said, if that would be acceptable, I would be happy to do that. And what he meant by that was, if it would be acceptable to the Russian Orthodox Church. Hmm. And the Russian Orthodox Church didn't want him there. Gorbachev wanted him there. The Russian Orthodox Church didn't want him there. So you know, the Orthodox Church has had this strong nationalist streak for a long time. We're seeing it now with Kirill, who was in the KGB, the patriarch, as was Putin. Maybe working together. I don't know about working together, but at the very least, refusing to condemn Putin. And by the way, it's got a lot of people in their defense. A lot of faithful members of the Russian Orthodox Church around the world are very angry with their patriarch about this. Yeah, so I don't want to be too hard on the church in general, but the patriarch is the real problem.
The Holy Father just canceled his meeting with Patriarch Kirill, so The optics of that would have been terrible. And it's a shame because we need unity. Some of the stuff he's saying is just unbelievable. Hey, Mike, it's always good to have you call in. That was a great question. Appreciate you being here. And I'm going to look into him. My producer, Maggie, was telling me a little bit of about the mix of cultism, you know, with some neo-pagan type of religion. And, you know, if Putin's getting that type of influence, Doctor, that's scary, a scary ideology. Neil's listening in East Norton, Pennsylvania. I don't know where that is located, Doc, whether it's close to you or not in Pennsylvania, but good to have you with us, Neil. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. East Norton is basically northwestern Philly suburbs.
Okay, so you're on the eastern side of the state. Good to have you.
Yes, yes, thank you. Two quick questions/points. I mean, obviously, we would never want to see anything escalate into a NATO region, NATO country. However, when you and the doctor mentioned Poland, I just want to run some stats by you to see if I'm on track. I mean, the last time I heard, there were 3.5 million troops, NATO troops, that is. If one NATO country gets invaded by Putin, then everyone gets in. It could start a world war. It could get China, North Korea involved. But strictly in Europe, Russia is being worn down by Ukraine. I mean, if it ever got to a ground, wouldn't NATO have an unbelievable advantage? I mean, you see 3.5 NATO troops. How many troops for land could there be for Russia?
Yeah, these are great questions. And I wrote a long piece on this for American Spectator about Russian wartime deaths. Okay, they always get wiped out. The numbers are amazing. In World War One, Russia lost more than any other country, 3.6 million people. All right, we lost 100,000 in World War One. In World War Two, we lost 400,000. The Brits lost 400,000. The Russians lost 27 million. This goes on and on and on. They always lose. When people are saying right now, hey, you know, the Ukraine's doing a pretty good job. The Russians are getting their heads handed to them. They're losing tens of – yeah, of course. This is what always happens. The Russians always, 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 always lose in the battlefield. Yeah. But they persevere through sheer numbers and by the will of really brutal dictators. And I think all of this actually creates an even more dangerous scenario, and I think we're seeing it right now with Putin – where he realizes that he's not getting his ambitions met through his troops and through his commanders. I've said for weeks, I think this can force him into a situation where he has to go really, he has to really escalate and use his weapons of mass destruction. But yeah, you're right. I mean, NATO, our troops, we would wipe them out. But when you have a country that backed into a corner with a dictator that could say, all right, well, I'm at the point, it's time to press the button. It's time to cut loose the nukes.
Yeah,
it's time to let the ICBMs fly. You know, that's the Armageddon scenario. And I'm learning with Putin something I didn't think was true of him 15, 20 years ago, but I'm seeing it now. He is really ruthless. And I honestly think he's capable. Yeah. I don't mean to scare people, but I think he's capable of it.
Neil, you're right about the numbers. Go ahead, Neil. I'll let you follow up. Go ahead.
No, and the only other point is that I'm a registered Democrat. However, I'm more conservative than I am. I'm not a lefty. I'm not a Trumper. However, I'm just being objective. When I hear this talk and this rhetoric about, you know, Russian propaganda convincing their citizens that Ukraine invaded us, I mean, isn't this right out of the Trump playbook?
Well, I don't want to compare it to Trump, but I can tell you this. It's right out of the Hitler playbook, right? Where Hitler used as a pretext for invading, for annexing Czechoslovakia, 1938, invading Poland, 1939. He said our ethnic Germans are being persecuted by, you know, in Danzig, in Sudetenland. So you create this scapegoat. You create this big lie. And I mean, you know, that's definitely what Putin is doing. And yeah, I don't want to compare Trump to somebody who's actually invaded another country. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Neil, first of all, thanks for your call. You're right about NATO numbers. I was going to say that overwhelmingly, analysts said the U.S. alone has an overwhelming advantage over Russia in conventional forces, you know, and we've seen the numbers already, how many tanks and personnel and individuals Russia has lost. Their military has become somewhat weak. And so to your point, Doctor, I don't think we'd see necessarily a conventional war. I do think we would see hypersonic missiles used. I think there'd be targeting of supplies and some of our weaponry. The question of ICBMs flying, I don't know if we'd ever see that. I know you said that's a possible scenario, and it's a frightening one. I wonder, before we got to that point, will we see low-yield nuclear weapons used to take out, you know, large swaths of area and personnel and weaponry and things along those lines? Do you really think that Russian missiles would fly and hit U.S. territory, or would it stay relegated to Ukraine and areas that are under conflict?
Well, no, it would more likely be that. You're exactly right. I mean, ICBMs are intercontinental ballistic missiles, right? These are the ones that go multiple thousands of miles. You know, the stuff that you would see in Europe would be more along the lines of INFs, which is what Reagan and Gorbachev actually banned when they signed the INF Treaty on the Feast Day of the Immaculate Conception, December 8, 1987. So those were in the range of like 300 to 3,400 miles. So you would see more likely the Russians using those types of weapons against cities in Europe that were involved. But if the United States were to become involved, right, and especially given the type of talk that Putin is engaging in right now, if he saw us as offensively, as he seems to, aiding and abetting his enemy that he's lusting after this country and its territory right now, why couldn't he retaliate against the U.S. on U.S. soil?
You would think
that he would only do that if we would hit him.
Right.
So I would judge this a very unlikely scenario. I think you're right. More likely would be other NATO countries in the region, especially the rivalry the Russians have had with Poland for such a long time. But once NATO gets in and NATO countries get involved, and if the United States gets in, it just keeps ratcheting up, and there could really be no end to the escalation and how ugly it could get.
Yeah, I know. You know, to the other point I think Neil brought up, he talked about the Russian people being supportive of Vladimir Putin. And in the early days of the war in Ukraine, tens of thousands of Russians protested the invasion, you know, that was launched in their name, this special operation. And then, of course, the media, you know, threatened to arrest journalists or anybody who didn't go along with their propaganda. And people were arrested in the streets. And I saw some data, I think it was earlier today, where Putin's favorability ratings jumped from 69% in January all the way up to 83% in late March. And one of the commentators made a great point. Is that true? Are people now being indoctrinated with, you know, the media, the propaganda they're getting? Do they really see the U.S. as being the enemy? And is Russia really denazifying their neighbor? Or is it the fact that, you know, people are lying to these surveyors and they're worried about being, you know, narked on by somebody, you know, Putin had come out and says, hey, you know, we should know who's a true Russian, a true patriot, versus who's a traitor and scum, because we'll spit them out of our mouth like a fly, you know, that statement that he had made a little while before. So I wonder where the Russian people really are on this. And when you only get one side of the media, as we've seen here in the States, you see how misinformation can fly and how it becomes a truth and a reality. What do you know about that? Where are they in terms of looking at Putin? I know here in the States, you wrote an article about how the left has become hawkish on Russia, or on Putin. But your thoughts?
Yeah. I can't imagine that most Russian people over there actually support this. But one thing that our left is doing that I know is really antagonizing Russian citizens is the way that they are canceling and penalizing Russians throughout the world. And in that piece for American Spectator, I think it's called "The Left's New Russia Hawks," I give the example of the Russian soprano, the opera star. Her name is Anna Netrebko, I believe is the name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was canceled by Met Opera for not sufficiently condemning the person of Putin. and I quote her in that piece where she says something to the effect of, "I'm against this immoral invasion of the Ukraine. This needs to stop right now." Now, you think that would make people happy, but instead you have, you know, somebody sitting in the comfort of a coffee shop in Manhattan,
right? Pounding his chest and his keyboard, right? She needs to be canceled. This is not condemned. This is not denouncing Putin strong enough, right? And meanwhile, this poor girl has family in Russia. Putin poisons dissidents. He kills people who give him. He's been doing that since the early 2000s, long before he ever went into Ukraine in 2014. So yeah, there's no profile and courage to sit there in Manhattan and cancel somebody. Like, what do you want the poor girl to do? I mean, she lives there. Her family is there. She condemned the invasion. So this idea, I don't. But in fact, one of my students said this to me, Drew. He said, I don't feel real comfortable being on the side of the left on this issue. I mean, these are the people that cancel us, right? Mm-hmm. They cancel us on Twitter. They cancel us over any LGBTQIA plus issue, right? If you don't have the right position on marriage, they cancel you if you voted for Trump on what you said about January 6th. If you entertain any questions about the November 2020 election after they, for 4 years from November 9th of 2016 on, said that the Russians colluded with Trump to steal the election from Hillary, right? Anything like this, they're cancel, cancel, cancel. And now they're using this Russia hammer and sickle to cancel people who they feel don't strongly enough condemn Putin. I really don't want to be a part of that side. I am against Putin regardless, but it's I could understand why a lot of people on our side are like, I don't really want to be on the side of liberals who cancel people over this. And while I answer your question, I'm sure a lot of Russian citizens are probably looking at a lot of this and saying, why are they punishing our people like this?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Right in America. What did they do?
Yeah, exactly.
Why are they doing this stuff? Good question.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me hold you there. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll jump back into the phones. My gratitude to Bruno is holding. I know you exercise a lot of patience sometimes to get on the air. I'll do my best to get you on. If you want to join us, I think there's one line open at 888-914-9149. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. Just taking a look at the latest developments with Russia. Is a new Cold War beginning, or maybe even more frightening? Are we going to see a hot war? Our conversation continues right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for allowing me to hang out with you, be part of your afternoon. It is always, it's always a lot of fun. I appreciate it. And one of my favorite guys to hang out with is Dr. Paul Kengor. He's a very well-loved professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, the executive director of the Center for Vision and Values, and an author. I'll recommend two of a number of the books he's written. His latest, The Devil and Karl Marx, if this stuff fascinates you, I think you'll like that. And also, A Pope and a President is very revealing. So it's good to have him here with us. Doctor, before we jump into the phones, a number of people want to join the conversation. I want your take on a Cold War. We've seen what's happened to the ruble. We know the sanctions that have been placed on Russia. If war crime investigators find out that there are indeed war crimes, Russia's going to be in a vice. What do you see happening if for some reason, he takes the Donbass area and claims victory and then pulls his troops out, or he gets defeated? What do you see happening next, one way or the other?
Well, again, I don't want to scare people and sound over the top, but I see him escalating. I don't see him pulling back. I see it getting worse. And one thing the caller in the last segment mentioned that he was a Democrat, and I would tell, especially if he voted for Joe Biden, I would tell him send some letters to the White House begging Joe Biden to start drilling for oil domestically in the United States. Because if we're not going to get it from Russia, which we're not going to, and Europe isn't going to, it's going to continue to increase the price of gasoline around the world. and it's going to cause an energy crisis in the United States unless we start drilling again. And as you know, I've never been a Trump apologist, but this was something, energy independence, which Donald Trump pushed and was really, really, really right on this issue.
Yes,
and we completely lost it totally as soon as Biden came into office. And it's just an outrageous situation. It need not be.
Ed in New Jersey, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm sorry, Ed, I didn't fire you up. That's me. Ed, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Ed.
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to say the same thing. The person who thought that Trump's playbook is being used by Putin has it exactly backwards, because peace was breaking out all over the world when Trump was president. Does he think that this would be happening now, if any of this would be happening, if Trump was still president? Because I do not see that. His playbook was to cause peace in the Middle East and peace in Israel, and he had the Russians under control, the Chinese were under control. He was talking to everybody, even the Nimrod in North Korea was under control. Now everything is totally backwards from what Trump had.
It really is true, Drew. I mean, look, the dates are real simple, okay? This is not complicated math. 2014, under President Obama, when Biden was vice president, Vladimir Putin invaded Crimea. And this came right after Barack Obama in the 2012 open mic moment turned to Dmitry Medvedev, who was Trump's puppet, and said, whispered, said, he didn't know he was on, said, I'll have more flexibility after the election. By the way, people don't know what he was referring to there. He was referring to canceling the joint U.S. missile shield with the Czech Republic and Poland that we had promised them through NATO. Obama was canceling it in order to accommodate Putin and the Russians. And Medvedev got this big, greedy, ghoulish look on his face and said, very good, I tell Vladimir, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he told Vladimir, and then 2 years later, Vladimir goes in and takes Crimea. Ronald Reagan said, we learned long ago, the Russians prey on weakness, not strength. If you were going to approach the Russians with a dove of peace in one hand, you better have a sword in the other. That's not what Obama did. And then under Trump for 4 years, Putin did nothing in the Ukraine. Nothing. He put it on pause. And then just a few months after the whole Afghanistan debacle, you and I did a show on this, right? Last July, August, we said, man, this is going to send a signal. It's going to send a signal to Putin on the Crimea. It's going to send a signal to Xi and the Chinese and Taiwan. And here we are, early 2022, and Putin goes in and invades all of the Ukraine, including Kiev. So no, I would not make comparisons to Trump here, right? Yeah, Putin behaved himself for whatever reason under Trump, and now he's acting up again really badly under Biden.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Trump was very unpredictable. I don't think a lot of these foreign nations knew how he would respond. Look at the stance he took against China with tariffs and everything else at that time. And look at the peace accords that he negotiated. It's pretty telling. I think history will have a very interesting view on this chapter of presidencies. Marcia in Naperville, Illinois. We have got a couple minutes. Go right ahead.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you, both of you, for informing us of our Catholic Christian responsibilities. And I thank you for that. And I just wanted to ask if in this serious time in salvation history, if the dogma of the Blessed Mother of all peoples, since this could be a way to save millions of souls, since so many are in jeopardy, and the Fathers of the Immaculate Conception in Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and the Pope that has, you know, made a reconsecration or,
right.
you know, whatever, why could we not, as a church, as they did in Austria, and they pulled out without any, you know, any shooting or tanks, could we not, as the church, like Dr. Mark Maribelli has stated, we have an angelic yes, army that is true and real under the mother general, as there was like only one general, I guess, in the war. I guess it was
Marsha. Let me let Doctor.
Could we not do that?
Yeah, I think you got a couple of things here. You talked about the dogma of Our Lady Mediatrix, Co-Redemptrix, and Advocate. I think that's huge. Be up to the Holy Father to declare that. But Dr. Miravalli makes a case that a lot of grace would flow. In Fatima, Our Lady requested First Saturday devotion to ensure Russia's conversion. And then you spoke of, you know, some of these great rosary crusades and miracles that have taken place, the one in Austria, the one in Lepanto, to pick up our beads and pray. I think that's really the solution to these problems. What can we do? We feel powerless when we see evil rise, when we see this type of horror. One thing we can do is pray. We'll have more impact with one day of prayer and fasting than any military leader possibly could. Doctor, I'm going to give you the final moment, though, here. We've got about 45 seconds for you.
Yeah, there's probably not much more that we can do, right, Drew, you and I, other than shows like this and Relevant Radio, and pray. And indeed, I know I was praying for this peace in the Ukraine, you know, all through my chaplet on Divine Mercy Sunday last week and every day. So, I know for a lot of people it's not a very good answer, right? They want to do more, right? And I pray every day. This isn't it. Well, keep praying.
Amen.
Yeah.
Hey, Doctor, thank you. I always love hanging out with you. We'll talk again soon, okay? I appreciate
it. All right,
it.
Thanks, Drew.
God bless you. I'm out of time for the day. If you missed any of it, hit the podcast. I'll be praying, especially for you. Please pray for me.